Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Respectfully Disagree. So, as the second wave of the pandemic reaches really catastrophic levels in India, a lot of people have taken to social media to find who is responsible for this tragedy. Is it the people flouting rules? Is it the government failing to treat or govern? Is it the United States embargo? Or is it an abstract quote unquote system that led us here with zero preparation? So this week we decided to sit and dissect this entire idea of the blame game, and can blame be constructive in times of crisis? So to start off with, let's give our listeners a little bit of context about how this blame game has been playing out online. This is Shishti, your host, by the way.
Hi, this is Rajvi. I'm the co-producer of Respectfully Disagree. So I think the main peg that we thought of doing this podcast with was the blame game, like between Indians and the US, because India was requesting the Biden administration to lift a ban on vaccine raw materials so that India would be able to make more vaccines. So and which they declined because they were like, we want to prioritize the vaccination of Americans. So, I mean, the decision has since been reversed, and they're sending raw materials and equipment and protective gear now to India. But when the original news broke, we saw like a lot of government officials slamming the US for their like hard-heartedness. And then that led to a lot of like anti-US sentiment on social media, on Indian like social media. And it was only like some days later that I think Adar Poonawalla then confirmed that the raw materials that we were actually bashing the US for not sending weren't even going to be for Covishield, the vaccine that people are getting right now, but it was for another vaccine, Covovax, that hasn't even been launched, hasn't gotten approval yet. So a lot of people kind of saw this whole kind of saga as like the government's way to shift blame to the US. Like effectively kind of diverting the attention and censure away from them, and how little they are doing to help the people like get like beds and oxygen and ventilators, etc. So that's like the international blame game. But there's lots of domestic blame games happening too between the center and the state.
So, I mean, that's interesting, Rajvi, because I feel like offline, a lot of people are kind of saying that, hey, it's not just the government, it's the individuals too. Like, the people are the ones who flouted the rules. So, we kind of deserve what's happening to us right now, which, as you can see from my tone, I disagree with, maybe not that respectfully. But, so let's talk about that, right? Like, how has this expanded into our interactions? Have Carla and Aditi, you all heard similar arguments in like your social circles or on groups. How has this blame game been playing out there?
Hey, this is Aditi. So I have seen the blame game happening on a daily basis everywhere. Like my social media feeds are half mutual aid and half who is at fault. So it's like the most recent example that particularly confounded me was so many people are suddenly calling out Shah Rukh Khan for, I don't know, posting about Kolkata Knight Riders instead of talking about COVID support. Whereas, it's been an open secret that Shah Rukh Khan makes like several very silent donations and doesn't really toot his own about his I don't know, his charity work. So it's very strange because everybody just wants to pick on somebody, and the somebody is almost always like somebody who's like having a good life and isn't in absolute misery or isn't absolutely angry during this crisis. Which I get it. Like, I mean, it'll be a bit weird if you're not like publicly angry during such a horrible national crisis, but like, damn, calm down.
Yeah, Aditi, it's Carla. I feel the same way. The anger is palpable and it's everywhere, right? So you see the blaming, like you see the blame game happening in the way headlines are framed even. Like, so you see it in these very public sort of ways in media portrayals, like in the way that things are being talked about in at that level, but then you also see it in all of these personal interactions. And I feel like it's a natural response to people feeling so helpless and feeling like this thing is happening around them, and there's this crisis that they can't control or that they have no ability to sort of wrap their minds around. And so, like, the most natural thing is this like frustration and intense sort of anger and rage, and you have to direct it somewhere. But Shushi, I'm gonna have to respectfully disagree with your respectful disagreement of your family members. And I'm saying this because I've spoken to and read some of the sort of inner thoughts of a few healthcare professionals who are sort of on the front lines, you know, dealing with the crisis right now. And one thing that I think I've picked up on is a little bit of like latent frustration, but a little bit of like sadness and heartbrokenness, I suppose, from them, where they say, you know, a lot of this could have been avoided. Like, everybody knew they shouldn't be going to weddings and restaurants. A lot of people knew they needed to wear masks. People knew they needed to do this stuff. And I'm sorry, but we all know it in India. Like, 4 months ago, everybody was flouting the rules. Nobody was doing anything. Like, people were full on going to packed restaurants, like going to weddings, going to parties. Like, everybody was acting like this thing didn't exist. So I also think it's fair, like, to blame the government. It's fair to blame our institutions. It's fair to blame plenty of people and institutions that screwed up here. But I also think there is some level of personal accountability, that people did just sort of completely flout all of the public health recommendations and then somehow expect that magically they weren't going to get sick. I'm not sure that it's entirely fair to remove individual responsibility from this.
So absolutely not. Sorry, I just want to respond to that quickly. So absolutely not. I think the fact that people are individually responsible is well known, not just here in the US as well, in Brazil, in different countries where there's been a second wave. Obviously, people have flouted the rules and not really followed protocol. But I think what's unfortunate is that, at least on that group where this debate came up, and I think in a lot of contexts where it does, is that it's a response to the criticism of the government. I obviously understand, I think since both of my parents are also doctors and are currently working in COVID wards, I also completely understand that the frustration coming from healthcare workers, which they also express. But I think what I'm specifically pointing to is using, hey, people were irresponsible, as an excuse. And also that, hello, but the government literally sanctioned, like, people, a lot of people also take cognizance of what the authorities are telling them and then act accordingly. If your government says at Davos that we've won the fight against corona and then encourages you to go and dip in the Ganga water and that's going to dip away and protect you from the pandemic, then I think that there's also a lot of liability there about how it encourages people to flout the norms. I mean, let's leave aside everything about their role as a government, but within this whole, like, individuals are to blame, I think the state also has a huge role to play there.
I also think one massive difference between countries that have come out, like, relatively well in this situation versus ones that haven't, is the ones that have had governments with really effective and consistent public health messaging, right? So the only way that individuals know how to behave is if they have consistent, reliable messaging coming from their governments. And so I guess I agree with you, Shrishti, on that one, that, like, you can't hold individuals to a certain level of responsibility when it comes to a totally unprecedented crisis if they're not getting consistent leadership about, you know, and communication about how to behave in a crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of both you and Carla and Shrishti, but I guess you kind of came to the same conclusion at the end. In the sense that the government kind of made it pretty clear around, like, December, January, that we were on our way, like, out of the pandemic, right? And then you know, there were a few hundred cases here or there, and then vaccinations were going to begin soon. And there was this whole rhetoric also that Indians have some kind of inexplicable immunity against the coronavirus, so that we don't really get, like, that deeply affected and have, like, severe cases. So then it's like, if you know, like, start going to house parties or whatever, like, you do whatever, I feel like there is a little bit of grain of salt there. Like, I don't really think that the people should be, like, the COVIDiots, you know, like, they should be completely blamed for this, because they kind of believed what the government told them. But then on the other side, by that point, we had seen almost like a year of the government not really doing that great of a job. So then at what point do the people need to kind of look through whatever facade of efficacy, like, is being, like, proposed to us? And at what point is it just up to us to kind of be like, okay, we're going to sit at home and we're not going to believe what the government is telling us, because we have seen, like, XXXX, like, 5,000 different examples of how they tend to lie.
We all need to kind of take cognizance of that, because it's very easy to say that, oh, if you didn't have the government telling you anything, then how could you be responsible? But we know very well that there are a lot of people who otherwise are critical of the government and otherwise would, you know, think through things for themselves, but here, I mean, did not choose to do that. Or like, you know, the countless number of people, for instance, who went to Goa for vacations. I don't think it ends and begins and ends with Pooja Bedi. So, I feel like there, it is an important conversation, but it is a conversation within a very small, you know, elite group of people that you can have it. But I think it's a very important one because we can't let that group of people, aka us, off the hook here in a situation like this.
Oh no, I was also going to point out the point you raised because I, as you were talking, I basically convinced myself to switch positions on this point, which is like the percentage of the population that has the option to choose whether to flout the rules or not is actually so infinitesimal that I'm not sure it really matters, right? And actually, like, whose responsibility is it to put all of the rules in place to protect people who can't choose whether they go, you know, leave the house to go to work or not, or whether they have protections in place? That is, those are government standards that need to be there, right? Those rules about, like, you know, how companies need to treat employees, how to space people out, how to protect them, how to provide gear they need. All of those things are things that have to come from some sort of centralized source. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart.
And so looking at, like, so speaking of this, there's also like examples and comparisons we can draw for just what's happened in the past month, right? Like I'm thinking about the West Bengal political rallies and how the Madras High Court just said that it's the Election Commission's fault that these political rallies were like happened and they were allowed in and they're like facing murder charges or something. And then there's the Kumbh Mela also that got like explicit like endorsements from the government. But then a lot of people on social media are comparing that to how Maharashtra, the state of Maharashtra, saw like multiple religious days and festivals where like annual religious celebrations happen. But this year they did not happen. Why did they not happen? Because the government was very clear on like, okay, this is not something that anybody should partake in and you should not do this. And then there are pictures of like all of these empty sites where nobody really gathered and like nothing got like worse because of those particular things. So we see where like good, like strong messaging and implementation can also make a difference, regardless of like, so then you kind of take the agency from the individuals away altogether because you see how, a top-down approach, if done well, can work.
You know, the worst part about the Kumbh Mela in particular, about how decision-making is particularly egregiously messed up in India. Usually, so the Kumbh Mela, I think, falls in like 10 to 12 year, like intervals, I think, I'm not exactly sure, but, or I'm not 100% sure how it works, but like there's this bit of an interval in between each Kumbh Mela, and apparently it was supposed to happen next year, but the government brought it forward 1 year because of astrological reasons, and therefore it happened smack dab in the middle of a pandemic. Just no, like, they just went with it for astrological reasons.
So I have a question for you guys. Depending on who one chooses to blame, right? The people or one institution or like the system or like a certain kind of politician or whatever. At what point do you think we can stop bringing it up or we should stop bringing it up? At what point do we focus on the solutions and then instead of like looking behind to be like, you did this because of you, this has happened. You brought us into this situation. And so like, do you think there's like a threshold there?
I think that presumes that it's like a linear trajectory, but I think it happens simultaneously and it's important for it to happen simultaneously because I mean, I think blaming people is also what holds them accountable at the end of the day. I mean, arguably there is a difference between the two, but in this kind of an atmosphere, it's kind of hard to distinguish when everybody's feeling so strongly affected. So I do think that it's important and it happens simultaneously, like the constructive work and constructive criticism and blame happen simultaneously. And it's extremely, extremely important in like our country and the atmosphere that we find ourselves in that this whole narrative of constructive criticism doesn't take hold because it is time to hold people accountable in the harshest possible way, even if that means blaming them.
Okay, but Trishti, I have to disagree here. The outpouring of like vitriol and finger pointing on social media that we see about the situation in India right now, It doesn't appear to me to be truly holding anybody accountable. It feels emotional to me. It feels like an outpouring of frustration and anger and just like, you know, this feeling of like disbelief, like how did we end up here again, right? And just like horror with the situation. It's not looking particularly constructive to me. I don't really see who is going to be held accountable by people lashing out on social media the way they are now.
So this is interesting because there's like some kind of psychological basis to what Carla, you just said. And it's this difference between shame and guilt, right? When we blame somebody, most of the time, like we're also shaming them. And that's just usually like how the tone goes of when you are putting blame on someone. So like research says that like shame is completely antithetical to somebody being like socially constructive later. But guilt is different. Guilt actually fosters like socially adaptive behavior. And the difference is if you shame someone, then it means that they're kind of like focusing a lot of like hatred for themselves, like inward, and that basically just alienates them. But when there's like a more constructive guilt involved, then that is more focused on one action that they perhaps didn't do right instead of like the person that they are for having done that action. And so I think that's the difference between blame and accountability also. Like, I feel like maybe the tone matters in how you kind of convey blame to somebody. But an eye toward the future is perhaps more constructive, than looking back constantly to be like, it's because of you that this has happened. It's because of you that this has happened.
Yeah. But it also feels like, the blame that's happening right now is very, it's almost like a missile without like a clear target, you know? It's kind of just like going in one direction and then the mood changes and it goes in another direction. So it doesn't feel like it's based in, you know, unlike a let's say a social justice movement, right? Where a consistent sort of drumbeat that you build up in whatever, you know, whatever medium can be helpful in actually forcing institutional change. This doesn't feel like that. This just feels like people are lashing out and emoting. And so they don't quite have a clear target, except for, of course, the government, which I think has been, you know, like blame has been placed squarely and fairly so from the beginning of this. But all these other little outpourings and pockets just seem to be like wherever the mood lands that day. Like, for example, this whole influencer thing, I think is preposterous. Like the fact that anybody is wasting their time and energy getting mad at influencers who are frolicking through the Maldives. Like, who cares, right? You don't like this? It seems inappropriate. Unfollow them. Don't look at it. Like, I don't understand why. Like, they're not responsible for the pandemic. It's, you know, if you don't like it, do the worst possible thing you can do to a public figure, and that is ignore them, right? But like, why are we foisting so much on these people who are not public health officials? They have no like active participation in protecting anybody from this pandemic. I don't see any point in blaming them other than that people need to take their anger out on somebody.
So this is interesting, Carla, when we talk about famous people, right? Because another example that's playing out currently in the news right now is the IPL. The fact that the IPL is happening and in Delhi, literally next to a cremation ground, next to hospitals, there are cricketers who are being asked to go. They're not saying no. And so this whole question about who do we blame? So at first, when this news broke, a lot of people were blaming the cricketers. Like Virat Kohli is not posting anything on his Instagram about anything, but he's still like promoting some, I don't know, athletic wear or something. But then he's still going to this IPL. So do we require our cricketers not to play in this and boycott like this, whatever?
But now absolutely like, not.
Yeah, but then there's more information coming, right, about how the BCCI and the IPL and then the government, like all of them kind of have held like these cricketers like long-term contracts hostage to be like, you have to show up and, you know, like XXX will be consequences if you don't. So then there are like five different entities here that we can blame. And then obviously there are the watchers of the IPL, and there is some like weird warped like justification there that, you know, in times where we are all sad and sitting at home, we need to watch cricket because that will make us feel better. So that's also another like kind of entity that comes into play. So like, what do you guys think? Like, who do we blame in this particular situation? Or is it kind of just spread over all over.
Well, I was going to say, I take issue with the idea that there should be blame apportioned for this at all. As in, somebody might find it unseemly and inappropriate that people are like playing a game at a time like this. But I'm sure there's plenty of cricket fans who have just lived through a horribly traumatic year who say, like, why can't I have a few hours of levity? Like, what if people are doing it, if they're playing cricket safely and the players aren't at risk and nobody who has to be there and manage the situation is at risk, why can't we have something bright in our day to like...
There are so many people who are super happy with the fact that like a thing is happening and that thing is cricket. And like, though I understand the risks that come with something as large scale as cricket, like I feel like this argument can be applied for like something more small scale, like maybe, I don't know, an influencer doing makeup tips while the world's burning around. Because like, I don't know, maybe like people sitting in hospitals with nothing to do, or like people who are super anxious, maybe all they want, they don't want to sort of doom scroll through like thousands of requests for help and thousands of like the correct, politically correct takes about COVID, right? Sometimes they just want to like, I don't know, watch like an awful fashion video, or like somebody, I don't know, cutting their hair, or like somebody in a vacation at the Maldives. I feel like that's the reason why you can't sort of like knock these people, because like, even though they are tone deaf, they're not actually, because they're trying their best. Even though they are, okay, partially tone deaf, they're still sort of providing their own unique service for like, I don't know, bringing a certain amount of levity to the horror around us, right? And that's important to them.
Honestly, the problem is not the celebrity doing the makeup tutorials or the IPL being played. It's an easy thing to distract to, because they're easy targets, you know what I mean? And they're easy sources to like put all of your frustration on this person doing a makeup tutorial. But they have little to nothing to do with the state of affairs right now, like at large. And they're the wrong people to be having this whole discussion about.
I also wonder how blame is constructive in a situation like this, where the bad thing has already happened. And so blaming is not going to change anything, right? Blaming could ultimately convince people to perhaps vote in a different government, like the next time that that's a possibility, right? But other than that, blaming people is not going to stop people from getting COVID right now, right? It's not going to stop them from dying in hospitals. It's not going to somehow replenish the oxygen supply. Like, none of these things are going to be solved by blaming. And I think in this instance, it feels like the more constructive response is one that galvanizes people to act in whatever way, small way is possible, to actually try to come to some sort of helpful solution for people, rather than just lashing out at whatever targets people can find.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, like just arming people with enough information, and also like, I guess, targeting them to have like more information about things that they should know better moving forward, is perhaps, I don't know, like a more subtle approach toward getting them to change their vote next time. But when it comes to blame, there was this like distant from India like phenomenon that happens in the US a lot, and I thought that was an interesting case study to talk about blame and how it could be perhaps good on a societal level to kind of figure out what are the different causes or like catalysts for something to happen, which is like school shootings in the US. And so like pro like Second Amendment people, they try to put the blame on anything that's not guns, right? So it can be mental illness or violent video games or broken families or, I don't know, black people or even like trench coats, according to this one report. But anti-gun advocates will be like, okay, let's get the guns out of here first and then deal with all the other contributors. And of course, like research backs up the anti-gun people, because it says that the primary predictor of gun violence is not mental health issues, but access to guns. And of course, like, saying that mentally ill people like shoot up schools is obviously a very incorrect and like stigmatized way of looking at mental illness. But I like this case study because of the fact that like obviously you have to take the guns away. Like, I'm very pro like just don't take the guns away from people. But also it kind of paints like a more hierarchical idea of what we should tackle, you know. Like, is there a masculinity crisis in the country? Okay, maybe that comes second, let's tackle that. Like, is there like a racism hatred thing here? Okay, let's tackle that. So there at least like So because of this blame, right, because of all of these different parties like blaming XXXXX things, it kind of gives a more comprehensive idea of what different factors contribute to this gun violence problem, and then how do we make a priority list of like what to tackle first. So I guess in that sense, it's kind of cool.
I was going to mention one place where I actually think the blaming is working for a movement. And I think for Black Lives Matter, I actually think the blaming, the personal blaming, personal accountability thing is working very well. So one thing that the movement, you know, has been doing is calling out specific people on specific police forces. So not only when there have been instances of police brutality, identifying that specific police person and making sure everybody knows who they are. That's one type of blaming. But they've also been specifically calling out heads of police departments, right? People who used to hide behind the cloak of like management or whatever, like, you know, they're in an administrative role. And so they weren't like the face of a crisis. And the BLM movement has been calling out those people and asking them to sort of, you know, to fire people who have been involved in a lot of these like horrific incidences recently. And I think that personal blaming has actually created sort of a bridge to that accountability. I mean, Rajvi, you were talking about the difference between blame and accountability. And I think we see a few examples in BLM where the blame has actually led to, you know, accountability. And I think that's kind of an interesting, so I think it's working. Like the personal finger pointing is actually working for BLM. Now, is it doing it in a without ruffling people's feathers? No, of course not. It's creating more societal divisions, and it's actually having, you know, it's getting people to kind of dig in a little more on the other side. So I'm not sure it's changing the opinions of people who were anyways opposed to the movement, but I do think that it's helping to shift public opinion, especially in the middle.
Do you think that this also works in the case of like different problems? Because I think sometimes this idea of like blame game and like let's find out who's responsible can also be like a bit of an issue, especially when you're talking about like atrocities against the marginalized, right? Like if it's caste atrocities or violence against women, I think it can very easily be used to say that, oh, actually, you know, there were different factors at play. Like this person provoked the mob to lynch them, or you know, when a woman is harassed on the streets, maybe it's what she's wearing or the fact that she's drinking alcohol or stuff like that. So do you think that this idea of blame kind of becomes a bit complicated when you're talking about situations like that, where there are like power dynamics at play?
I mean, you're kind of right in the sense that I'm not sure if it translates, like this kind of theory translates to every single issue that is complicated, because like, for example, take like violence against women, for example, and how, you know, like if a woman is assaulted, then most of the time there is like a lot of things in line before which we can go to a societal, like patriarchal, like structure in which etc. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but alcohol comes in place before then, clothing comes into place before then, maybe that person's character or their upbringing or their background comes before then, and then I mean, in like pop culture, for example, the perpetrator comes before that, but even then I feel like we're kind of stuck in a very individual idea of blame, and that's how like the criminal justice system also works, where we like blame this one person and then we do justice to that one person and then like it's kind of done. I don't think we ever go beyond that. So in that way, I think blame is more of a distractor than it is a tool by which we can identify different factors that contribute to an issue.
Okay, but at an individual level, when it comes to blame, so at least when it comes to, say, like somebody going to prison for something, or somebody having to deal with the consequences of something, or somebody who's been cancelled or has made like a grievous error about something. The problem with blame is that it's a burden that you almost have to shoulder like for an indefinite amount of time, because when you sort of go together and you blame somebody and like you sort of put them in the spot about this horrible thing that they did or like this harm that they've caused, that's all there is. When you sort of flip it and like you change, like even at a base level, you change it to like taking responsibility for something or even taking accountability for something, that the language in itself sort of neutralizes in a way. And but it doesn't take away from the severity of the situation, right? Like, I wouldn't say holding somebody responsible is too different from blaming somebody, at least when it comes to like a consequences perspective. I just think it's different because it's a bit more engaging and it's a bit more like, it's a way of starting dialogue almost. So, yeah.
Okay, but ultimately, to conclude this very passionate episode, but to conclude, like, where do we stand on how we see the concept of blame? So do you think that it's the first step to accountability?
I feel like blame is okay as long as it can turn into like a solution-centric approach like quickly. Otherwise, I feel like we would be just running in circles.
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like the way it's currently playing out with the India crisis, the blame game, I don't think is going to end up being very productive. But I think there's like specific ways, like you were saying, Srishti, where like it can be turned into the first step towards accountability. But I think that's where there's like a laser clear focus on who the target is, like who is responsible for this. And everyone sort of agrees and continues to hammer home not only who's responsible, but like how they screwed up and like how this needs to be fixed. So I think very also clear communication about the blame, because otherwise when it's this very amorphous thing and the finger pointing is moving all over the place, I don't think it leads anywhere.
I don't know, dude, it's like a rough time. So I guess at this point, I think do whatever you want, I guess, whatever makes you sleep better at night at this point. I guess that's what people are doing. And if it's blame, then like, even if it's totally not constructive and it sucks, just do it and like delete it the next morning. That's the best you can do at this point, I guess. Like, I mean, I don't know if anybody has the capacity to think or like, I don't know, like connect to brain cells in their heads left anymore during this crisis. So, or maybe like, I don't know, like, but I think if you are serious about like the whole holding people responsible thing, if you are serious about like why these institutional failures have happened, I think it's best to sort of figure out ways to hold leaders accountable rather than railing about like insensitive influencers or I don't know, just some person on a social media platform who said something really dumb.
I guess that's the note that we end on, and I guess the only hope is that the blame ultimately turns to like a huge movement.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And to blame the right people.